This is Shippensburg 2015, Class 2 on Unlocking Revelation with our brother Stephen Hornhart, and this is his fifth class entitled, And the Seven Angels Prepare Themselves to Sound.
Thanks, Eric. People, how are you? Well, almost to the end. This is the second last day. Tomorrow is the last day. You're looking pretty good, actually, for about this time in a Bible school. Normally at Bible schools with the young people's classes, they're almost all heads on tables. Morning, Joseph. Good of you to join us. Welcome. Where are you from?
I'm from Virginia.
Virginia?
Yeah. I was trying to figure out if you were asking what Cleo.
No props. Good of you to join us. So you're here for the next couple of days, today and tomorrow?
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Well, nice to have you here. Alrighty. We're dealing with the seals. And yesterday we started to look at the seals and we looked at the four horses. How are you doing, Tori? You with us?
Doing great.
Oh, sleepy heads. Okay. Well, Tori, you can be a person that can get us going, get the energy flying through your body. I won't pick on you. Tori, I won't pick on you exactly right now. However, the four horses, the four badgers. Tell me about the bow without an arrow. In a quick sentence, the bow without an arrow. No arrow. What kind of warfare is it?
Religious.
Good. Spiritual warfare, not a carnal warfare. Very good. What about the badge of the rider of the red horse? Pardon me? Pardon me? A lot of war and a lot of people died. Yes, we're going to look at that sword in a moment. Very good. Did we say anything about the balances yesterday? The badge of the rider with the balances. Can't remember whether we said. Do you remember anything on the balances? I know he did. Okay. And the name death. Now, we're going to now go into some detail between today and tomorrow about all of these badges. What we did say yesterday, however, is that the earth and the horse and its colour and the rider all had certain symbology. Now, the horse and its colour represents what? The horse and its colour. All right. Let's go back to the beginning. The earth represents? Good, the empire. The horse and the colour represents? Excellent. The condition of the Roman Empire at the particular given time. And the rider represents good. The reason for the condition of the Roman Empire. All right, let's now go into the first horse. And let's get your Bibles open to Revelation chapter 6. Now, we're going to look at some of the detail of these emperors and to see what happened. We was a bit rushed yesterday because we got toward the end of our session and we just started to tap into this. So Revelation chapter 6, let's see if we can get some marking in here and understand the detail of these emperors. So we see there, it says, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. Now we said that the white horse represents peace. How do we prove that? How do we prove that the white horse represents the peaceful period of the Roman Empire? Relatively peaceful. Peaceful as far as the political environment and the economic environment. How do we prove that the white horse represents peace? I've got a clue. Cassie's picked it up. I want you to look at verse 4. All look at verse 4. Tell me how verse 4 proves that the white horse represents peace. Okay, well, what does verse 4 say? That's true. He has a bow without an arrow. But don't forget, remember this, the person that's got a bow without an arrow are the brothers and sisters who are going to take the gospel. We're talking about the white horse, which is the symbol of the condition of the Roman, pagan Roman Empire. Daniel. Excellent. Did you all get that? So to prove that the white horse represents peace, Craig, I was looking for that. To prove that the white horse represents peace, go to verse 4, as Daniel rightly said. Now let's read verse 4 together. Who'd like to read verse 4 for us? Daniel, you might as well. You've got the microphone. Let's all follow that.
And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword.
Good. So when we go back to the horses, by the time we come to the blood red horse, power was given to him to take peace, to take that away, to take peace from the Roman earth. So that's how we prove that the white horse represents peace by virtue of the fact that the red horse took it away. Make sense? All happy with that? Alrighty, now somebody mentioned a minute ago that this warfare was a spiritual warfare, and we made the point yesterday, didn't we, young people, that the bow is a symbol of what? What's a bow the symbol of? And there were three statements that we put up on the screen. Here's a bow. It's a symbol of...
Verses 2.
Yeah.
So it was the word, and there's Zechariah 9, verse 13, Isaiah 66, verse 19, and Psalm 64, verse 3.
Okay, and I think what we need to do is to turn up Zechariah 9 and verse 13. Let's turn up Zechariah 9 and verse 13, because the bow is a symbol of a multitude. So let's have all of us turn up this very important quote, because this just builds up a little picture of what the bow means. Now remember, we said that these are the brothers and sisters that are going to preach the gospel. They've got a bow without an arrow. It's a spiritual warfare, not a carnal warfare. All right, might get somebody to read for us Zechariah chapter 9. And let me get it first. Zechariah, that Old Testament? Or is it New Testament? I'm nearly there. Now, when we come to Zechariah 9, young people, I want you to understand in Zechariah 9, this verse that we're going to read, is post-Armageddon. All right? So we're going to read a verse that is after Armageddon. Struggling with Zechariah 9. All righty. Now, oh, mate, starts with?
Oh,
how come I don't know your name yet? Oh, Jade. Oh, okay, sorry, Jade. It's one of those. It's a very... Okay, so Jade, you'll read for us. We'll all follow. Oh, we need the microphone. I'm not used to this. We'll use the microphone. Thanks, Jade. Now, young people, this is proving that the bow represents a multitude. Zechariah 9, verse 13. Now, when we read this verse, if you haven't got a note in your margin, this is post-Armageddon. All right, the verse we're going to read is post-Armageddon. These are events that you and I are going to be involved in after Armageddon. All right, get that in your head? That's the context. So after Armageddon, this is what's going to happen. Thanks, Jade.
When I have bent Judah for me, filled the bow with Ephraim, and raised up thy sons, O Zion, against thy sons, O Greece, and made thee as the sword of a mighty man.
See what happens? What's God going to do? God is going to bend Judah. So the tribe of Judah, who will be the people in the land of Israel when the Lord Jesus Christ returns and they're saved after Armageddon, God is actually going to take a whole multitude of Judah and bend them like a bow, and then he's going to fill the Judah bow with the Ephraim arrow. And what Elijah is going to do is Elijah is going to go forward and he's going to gather all of the scattered Jews, Ephraim, from Europe and bring them back into the land of Israel just before the millennium begins. So the Ephraim arrow and the Judah bow, they're going to fight their way through the peoples of Europe and all the chaos that's going to exist. So there's a very, very amazing prophecy. But what we've got here is that Judah is a multitude in the hand of God. Judah is a bow in the hand of God. That makes sense? So that proves to us, back in Revelation, that the bow is about a multitude who are going to be preaching the truth. Just turn up to Psalm 64. I won't look at Isaiah 66. We'll go and look at Psalm 64, because that kind of gives us the idea about arrows. Okie dokie. Psalm 64. Okay, Jade, thank you. Who'd like to read Psalm 64? Thanks, Alexa. Psalm 64, verse 3 and 4. Now, this, of course, is in the negative. Well, these aren't very nice people in Psalm 64. Way you go, Alexa.
Who wins their tongue like a sword and bend their arrows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not.
Thank you. You can see what that verse is saying? What are words? What are words in that verse? They're arrows. So when these people bend their tongue like a bow, they shoot out words like arrows. In this case, they're bitter words. These are the kind of people that speak and they don't care what they say. They don't care how they hurt anybody. So therefore, even though it's in the negative sense, it gives us this idea that this bow without an arrow, you don't need a bow. If you're a multitude, if you are the saints in this time of the Roman Empire as the multitude, and you are the bow, you don't need an arrow, your tongue and your words, sorry, your tongue is the bow, your words are the arrow. And that proves to us that these were brethren and sisters in the peaceful period of the Roman Empire, which were spreading the gospel in that 84-year period of the peaceful existence of the Roman Empire. Alrighty, now to prove that this was the peaceful period of the Roman Empire, have a look at these emperors, which we briefly looked at yesterday. Now to prove that, there's some historical writings that show just how tranquil this Roman Empire was. Now the historical record says this. This is the historical writings of LaRousse. And they say this, and of course this person's not reading the Bible or Revelation 6, but they say to everyone, the reign of Trajan seemed like the return to the golden age. It was during the reign of Antoninus Pius that the Roman Empire reached the zenith of its power and prosperity, and for this reason, his reign appears uninteresting and eventless. So if you went up there and said, how's it going today? He says, oh, it's all right. Have any trouble? No. How's the coffee? Good. Anyone getting upset? No. Anything happening in the Roman Empire? Not really. So calm, so tranquil. That's what the historians say. Marcus Aurelius had absolute need of domestic peace in order to carry out his foreign policy. I just want to finish off with this little statement by Edward Gibbon. If a man were called upon to fix a period in the history of the world during which the condition of the human race was most happy and prosperous, he would without hesitation name that which elapsed from the death of Domitian, now Domitian was just before Nerva, to the ascension of Commodus, and Commodus, you wait and you hear about him in a minute, he was the emperor just after Marcus Aurelius. So Gibbon says, pick any part of the history of Rome and the most happy period was that period. It just so happens, and he wasn't reading Revelation 6, it just so happens, God says, it was a white horse. And the historian says, it was the most happy period right through all of those five emperors. So there's history confirming the Bible as if the Bible needed to be confirmed. Alrighty, now let's just move through here. Let's now move on to the red horse. Five emperors, Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian, Antoninus Pius, Marcus Aurelius. Ooh, now we come into the blood red horse. And now we move into five more emperors in the second seal. Commodus, Pertinax, Julian, Septimus Severus, and Geta. Have a look at those names in a moment. 10 emperors so far in the pagan Roman Empire in Revelation chapter 6. Now let's have a look at what it says about the red horse. And when he'd opened the second seal, I heard the second. Now what was the beast we looked at yesterday? What's the beast? The cherubim. Who would you say the beast could be represented as? They're saying to John, John, come over here, you belong with us, and stand here and watch now the red horse. Was John part of the cherubim? Are we part of the cherubim? If we're manifesting God, we are part of the cherubim. Do you know what the word cherub means? The word cherub? It means to jump in a chariot and steer a chariot. And so what God does is he's in us and he's steering us like the rider of a chariot, making us move wherever he wants us to go if we will allow him. That's the idea of cherubim. God in us. That was Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ was a cherubim. God was in him. The immortal saints in the kingdom will be cherubim. God will be in them. So here are the angels, here are the cherubim saying to John, come over here, John, and I want you to look. And there went out another horse that was red, fiery red. And power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword. Now, young people, this great sword is there. This is, in the Greek, the Makaira. It is the assassin's dagger. It's not a long sword that they used from horses and like a big saber. This is the little assassin's dagger. And we said this yesterday, that all the emperors had them. All the Praetorian Guard had them. And if they got into trouble, they'd whip out their little Makaira from their cloak and you were gone. So it's the Makaira, the assassin's dagger. So there was a great sword. And it wasn't great in its length, but it was great in the effectiveness of it. Now, here's the thing, and I think a couple of you young girls were talking to Matt about this. Here's the difference. Now, you want to note the way the Bible works. The word sword in the second seal is Makaira. It's the assassin's dagger, worth writing down. And the reason it's worth writing down is because there's a contrast, an absolute contrast between the word sword in verse 4 and the word sword in verse 8. What I want you to do is to write in your margins next to verse 4, Makaira. That word up there, Makaira. And just pop underneath it, assassin's dagger. It's important that you do that because the word sword in verse 8 is a different Greek word. It's a different sword. So just give you a minute or two, not 2 minutes. Just get you to write next to verse 4, the assassin's dagger. It is in the Greek, the Makaira. You got any pencils? You don't have any pencils on your lonesome? Nothing. Can we lend young Elijah? Can we lend Elijah a pencil? Thank you very much. Elijah, you are now online. Everyone else got that down? Good. Does anybody know what the sword in verse 8 is? It's not the Makaira, it's not the assassin's dagger. Anyone got anything written in their margin as to what that sword is? Well, in verse 8, young people, it is this one. It's the long Thracian sword. I'll tell you why in a minute. Very important. God chose that sword for the fourth seal, very, very importantly, different from the sword in the second seal. This is not an assassin's dagger. This is a large Thracian weapon used by the Thracians. It's called a rompheia or a rompheia. So what I want you to do, because you're going to need this for the stories I'm going to tell you in a minute, I need you to write next to that sword, Greek is rompheia or rompheia. It's the Thracian sword. Two different swords. Why? Well, there was a fellow who comes on in the fourth seal. I'm going to talk more about him in a moment. This fellow here was the first emperor of the fourth seal. And he was a Thracian. He was a monster. He was 8'6" tall. He's the first emperor of the fourth seal. 8.5 feet tall. They reckon that he used to wear his wife's bracelet as a ring. He was a monster. And when we get to the fourth seal, I'll show you what this Thracian did. And that's why God said, when we get to the fourth seal, he says, this fourth seal is about a Thracian sword. And it's all got to do with that bloke whose name was Maximin. Maximin, the 8.5-foot giant that wore his wife's bracelet on his hand as a ring. I'll tell you the story about that probably tomorrow. So that's why there's two different swords. There's a reason historically as to why God chose that to be the case. Alrighty. There went out a horse that was red. Power was given him to take peace. To take peace. You know this expression, to take peace, in the Greek is the Pax Romana. Ever heard of the Pax Romana? The peace of Rome. Nobody destroys the peace of Rome. Nobody. When Rome took you, you were guaranteed peace. But here are the Romans themselves in charge, taking away the Pax Romana from the earth. Now, young people, look at this. The record says that they should kill one another. That's all it says. I want to show you these stories about how these emperors literally fulfilled that little statement in the Red Horse period that they would kill one another. This was civil war. Do you remember how many people were dying in Rome in a day in this period? Close. 2,000. Good. So there were 2,000 people dying in the streets of Rome. Don't go shopping in Rome. Don't go to the marketplaces. You'll be treading over corpses and blood everywhere. That's how bad it was in Rome in this time period. And here is the empire descending into civil war for 31 years. Well, the first emperor of the second seal was a man by the name of Commodus. Young people, he was an absolute nutcase, was Commodus. He was an idiot. If you got a fruitcake and put a fruitcake on the table and you put Commodus next to it, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the fruitcake and Commodus. He was an unbelievably crazy man. Well, when you look at the historical records about Commodus, you read this. 3 years before his death, Marcus Aurelius, who was Commodus' dad, named Commodus as his successor. Now have a look at this. There's Marcus Aurelius. So 3 years before he died, he named Commodus his successor. And Commodus was 16 years old when he was named as the successor to Marcus Aurelius. 16. Who's 16? So there you go, Dad. You guys have just been named as the successor of the emperor of the greatest empire in the world, and you're 16. Well, do you know what Commodus did? He was named as the emperor, and he just sat around, didn't do much, didn't get into trouble. He wasn't brilliant, but he just didn't muck up, all right? But when his dad died, when Commodus' dad died, Marcus Aurelius, then Commodus was 19, and 19 he then became the emperor of Rome. Well, the historical record says this. Commodus was incapable, he was a drunkard, and he was a profligate. And a profligate is somebody who was extravagantly indulgent. Power once went to his head when he was 19 and he got the reins of power, and he demanded recognition and worship as a god. Commodus used to dress up like Hercules, and he used to go into the arena and he'd walk around like this in the arena, dressed up like Hercules, and he'd go, "Hercules!" And all the people in the arena would go, "Hercules!" Like a big Mexican wave all the way around the arena. And he'd strut around dressed up like Hercules and he'd say, "Bring on my opponent." And in'd come his opponent, and Commodus would just dispatch him like that. Everyone would go, "Hercules!" And he'd say, "Bring on another." And then another opponent would come and he'd just dispatch him like that. Didn't matter how many people came in, Commodus got rid of them like that. Anyway, the people in the audience are going, "Have a closer look down there in the arena. There's something wrong. Watch Commodus when he fights his opponent next." Guess what? Nobody who fought him was allowed to have a weapon. And the people were going, "He's not quite right. He's not quite right, is Commodus." So, the historians tell us that he abandoned the reins of government to his licentious favourites. He renounced the energetic defensive policies of his father. He pillaged the treasury and persecuted the Senate without mercy. And it's not unexpectedly, of course, that plots against his life are numerous. So here's Commodus walking home from the theatre one night, and he's walking down this corridor, and there's all these pillars, and somebody jumped out from the pillar with a machaira and said, "Commodus, you profligate, the Senate sends you this." Tried to assassinate him. And as soon as Commodus heard the word Senate, he was absolutely enraged. Now, mind you, this assassin didn't kill Commodus. I don't know how, because Commodus wasn't used to fighting anybody with a weapon, but he didn't kill him. Anyway, Commodus, when he heard the word Senate, he absolutely went through the Senate and just devastated the lot of them. He went like an enraged man. Well, they got him. They got Commodus. They didn't stick him with Makara. They throttled the life out of him by strangling him. And this next fellow came on the scene, whose name was Pertinax. The army put Pertinax in his place. Now, Pertinax was a straight man. You could call him a virtuous pagan. He wanted to sort out the rot that had already been instilled in there by Commodus. And so, therefore, Pertinax comes in, young people. He's going to be as straight as a die. Nobody is going to corrupt the empire with Pertinax. Pertinax was a senator of consular rank. And in he comes, and he's in the job. He's in the job for 2 days. And they want him out. 2 days. Could you imagine being given a job there? There's your job. And you're in 2 days, and people want you fired? Now, why they wanted him out was because he was too straight. It was too good. He wasn't corrupt enough. All the army wanted all these kickbacks. They wanted all these perks. They wanted a bit of corruption. They wanted a bit of money on the side. And they wanted to get rid of Pertinax. Well, Pertinax lasted just under 3 months. Right? So nearly 3 months later, the Praetorian Guard came to get him. 15,000 of them. In they come to Pertinax's house, knocking on the front door, "We want to see you." Now, Pertinax wasn't a coward. Didn't flee the city. Didn't hide under his bed. He went out to these 15,000 Praetorian Guard and he said, "What do you want?" They said, "We want you out." He said, "Fellas, settle down. Just settle down." He said, "Do you want to go back to the days of the fruitcake? Really? Settle down. We've got to get this empire on track." "Oh, I suppose you're right. You know, the mob, yeah, I suppose." Put their Makaras back in their pocket. And one person said, "No, I don't trust this bloke." And he lunged forward. Well, of course, when one person lunges forward, you know, the mob follow. I don't know whether 15,000 got him. Couldn't have. They wouldn't have been able to reach him. But all of these Makaras went into poor old Pertinax. It was like a sieve. It was like Swiss cheese. And what they did is they cut his head off. They cut Pertinax's head off and they put Pertinax's head on a pole. And they marched through the streets of Rome saying, "Who wants to buy the empire?" They've got Pertinax's head on a pole and they're auctioning the empire. Who's got enough money to buy it? Anyone who's got the most money, there's Pertinax's head bobbing on a pole. You can buy the empire. Well, these couple of old fellas came along with their wallets and they opened up their wallets. And one of the fellas was named Didius Julianus and he had more money than anybody else. He said, "I'll buy the empire. I'll buy it. I'll become emperor." There he was, up there, reigning. Old, useless bloke, didn't know how to run an empire, but he had money. And all the people in Rome are going, "What is going on? We've had a fruitcake that's been strangled. We've had a straight guy that's put his head on a pole and they've auctioned off the empire. Now we've got an old fella that's useless and he can't run the empire." Well, out in the provinces, there are three generals trying to hold the empire together, hardened soldiers. And one of those generals was Septimus Severus. He's out there in the provinces and he heard what was going on in Rome. He's coming to get him. He liked Pertinax, did Septimus Severus. And so Septimus Severus with the other two generals are on the march to sort things out in Rome. And as they're marching toward Rome to sort this matter out, the Praetorian Guard who were in Rome, who were responsible for this mess, hear that Septimus Severus is coming. And they are soft as butter, the Praetorian Guard. These guys have been out there in the provinces fighting. They're hard. And the Praetorian Guard are soft as butter. And they hear that Septimus is coming and they're scared stiff. And they go, "Oh, we better put our armour on. We better practice. Oh, I've got blisters. We better stop watching DVDs." They're as soft as butter. Anyway, they said, "What are we going to do? We're going to do something to stop Septimus Severus coming. I know what we'll do. We'll cut Didius's head off and send it to Septimus Severus as a sorry note." So they cut off Didius's head. I mean, the record says, and they will kill each other. That's what the Bible says. And they will kill one another. And when you read the history, you go, how accurate is that little sentence? And so they cut Didius's head off and send it to Septimus Severus saying, "We're sorry." And that really enraged Septimus. He didn't like Didius, but that enraged Septimus Severus. So in comes Septimus Severus, and he's going to remove the Praetorian Guard and he replaced them with his own soldiers. And then Septimus Severus had a son called Geta. Young people, the record simply says, with respect to these emperors and this second seal, they will kill one another. How are we going, Craig? What time have we got? Oh, that's okay. All righty. 15 minutes. Seal number three. So, young people, five emperors. Five emperors. Have a look at those emperors for about 30 seconds. I'm going to give you a memory test. See if you can absorb their names in 15 seconds. 15 minutes, thank you. Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian, Antonius Pius, Marcus Aurelius, Commodus, Pertinax, Julian, Septimus Severus, Geta. Do it again in your head. Again, again, memorize them. Give you 30 seconds and see how good your memory is. All got them? No, don't even ask me. Don't even go there. Shake your head. Well, try and think of the first three. Even if you can memorize the first three or four. Pardon me? And them. What did you say?
And them.
Say that again.
It's whatever. It's like.
N-T-H-E-M.
Yeah. And them.
And them.
No, and them.
N-T-H-E-M. First letter. First
letter. Oh, you're using a mnemonic. A mnemonic. Oh, I see. Well done. Oh, that's excellent. Good way to remember. Okay. Oh, not helping me, is it? Okay. Here we go. 10 emperors. First five emperors of the first seal. First five emperors of the second seal. Ooh. I'll ask for volunteers. First one. Yes, Cassie. First emperor of the first seal. Oh. First emperor of the first seal.
Nerva.
Who?
Nerva.
Don't get nervous about that one, will you? Nerva. Second emperor.
Trajan.
Trajan. Trajan. Well done. Third emperor.
Hadrian.
Hadrian. Fourth emperor. Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian.
Antonius Pius.
Antonius Pius. Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian, Antonius Pius. Last emperor. Starts with an M.
Marcus Aurelius.
Excellent. Marcus Aurelius or Marcus Aurelius. Nerva. Trajan. Hadrian. Antonius Pius. Marcus Aurelius. Second emperor. Think of the fruitcake.
Commodus.
Commodus, the fruitcake. Next one, straight man, head got cut off, put on a pole. No perks from this man.
Pertinax.
Pertinax. Next one, old fellow, stupid and useless, but had lots of money.
Diodes.
Diodes. Julianus, called Julian for short. Well done. Next emperor who's coming in. From outside the provinces. His name sounds like a disease.
Septimus Severus.
Close. Septimus Severus. Severus. Think of Severus. Thinking severing people. Septimus Severus. Very good. And his son. Very little brief name. We haven't mentioned anything about him. And get all your brains together.
Geta.
Geta. Well done, young people. Excellent. Okay. See how good you go with those tomorrow, because you've got to add four more to them. So when we come to the next seal, the four more that we're going to add are, in fact, Caracalla. Third seal, black horse, four emperors, Caracalla, Macrinus, Elagabalus. What a funny name that is, and Severus Alexander. Think about those names, eh? Caracalla. Oh, he was a madman, that bloke. He was an animal. Macrinus, oh, I don't remember much about him. Elagabalus, horrible man. Severus Alexander, not bad. 17 when he began to reign. 17, Severus Alexander. Okay, young people, the black horse. Let's have a look at now verse 5 of Revelation 6. 24 years now. We've now had 84 years of the white horse. How many years of the red horse? How many years of civil war? Oh, you can sing it out, Cassie. I'll repeat it for you. 31, very good. 31 years of civil war, 84 years of peace. Now we've got 24 years of blackness. Now, is the black horse a fitting symbol of this condition of the Roman Empire? Well, you know, if you went back to Job 30 and verse 26 and verse 31, you would read about Job. Job says, "My skin is black." If you were to read Job chapter 30, it's an awful chapter. Job says, "Oh, before I had honor, now I've got nothing. Before young people really liked me, now they're writing awful songs about me and they're singing them about me." Job says, "Before I could run with young people, I could jump off of high places, now I'm just almost at the door of death." Job says, "I'll go to God." And he prays to God and he sees God's brutal against him. It's an awful chapter. I am black. And it's a chapter that describes Job as being mourning. It describes Job as being in distress. It describes Job as being in intense depression of mind. And that's exactly what was in the Roman Empire with the people in this black horse period. It was mourning, distress, and depression. Why? Why were the people in that state in the black horse period? Young people, it's all about the balance. It's all about injustice. Rome was supposed to boast in equity, in fairness. But just like the red horse, they boasted in peace. And because they took peace away, you're very welcome. Here they boasted in justice. Have a look at these coins. These are coins that John would have been very familiar with. The balances. See the balances there? The balances there? Balances? Balances. So Rome boasted in equity and fairness. But there was no equity and fairness in the Roman Empire. Now when you have a look at this verse, young people, I want to show you a really challenging but interesting little verse. And you really got to get your head around this one. The record says in verse 6, "I heard a voice." I heard a voice in the midst of the four living ones say, "A measure of wheat for a penny, 3 measures of barley for a penny, but don't you hurt the oil and the wine." What voice is this, do you think? "I heard a voice," says John, "in the midst of the four living ones." Now, this is a terrible period in the Roman Empire. Do you think this voice is the voice of the people crying out? "We're suffering awful depression. We're suffering awful famine." Is this the people? No, it's not. This voice is the voice of the judiciary. This is the voice of people who are in power. This is the voice of the government. And the voice of the government is going to say, "A measure of wheat for..." This is taxation. Now, I want to prove this to you. You might like to write a cross reference next to the word voice. In Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1, this is what we read. "Now, in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Persia, that the word of Yahweh by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, Yahweh stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation." Now, in your margin, that "make a proclamation," or in the Hebrew, is "caused a voice." So who's causing the voice in the times of Ezra? Who's causing the voice? Who's making the voice? In Ezra 1. Who's uttering the proclamation? Come on, young people, read the verse. Who's making the proclamation in that verse, Ezra 1, verse 1? Cyrus. It is, yeah. Cyrus caused a proclamation. Cyrus, who was in charge, caused a voice to go out. That's exactly what's happening here. The voice that's going out are those who are in charge. So what I need you to write in your margin is this. Next to that word voice, need to write in your margin, these are the decrees and the laws that were issued and carried out by those who were in authority. Alrighty, I'll just give you a couple of seconds to jot that down in some way so you've got that in your margin. This voice is the voice of the judiciary. It's the voice of the lawmakers, not the people. The voice of the lawmakers. They are going to bring taxation by a decree. And the reason they're going to tax people very, very heavily is so they can have a luxurious lifestyle and pay off their army. Alrighty, so you've got that there. You've made a note that this voice is the voice of those making the law, those in authority. So if you wanted to abbreviate your marginal note, you could simply say the voice is the voice of the authorities. How you doing, Chase? All going well, mate? Good? Good stretch there? Good? Okay. Now, I like this. This judicial voice would go out in the midst of the four living ones. What do you think that means? Young people, just focus with me. I know it's getting toward the end of the week and I know you're tired. And I know you're having late nights, and I know you're having not so early mornings, and I know you're having a lot of stuff to go into your head. What do you think? I mean, here I am, I'm the emperor, right? I'm the emperor. You're all the pagan Romans. I'm the emperor. You all are going to be taxed. Here's the tax. So it goes to the magistrate. Guess what the magistrate does? He adds his little cut. Then it goes down to the person working on the boats that are getting the grain off the ships. He adds his little cut. And then it goes down to those who are loading the wagons. They add their little cut. So when it first went from the emperor, the tax increases, it increases, it increases, it increases. It's like tax farming. And therefore the people who are working on the land, they can't afford to grow food. They can't afford the tax. And so people are walking off the land in the times of the Roman Empire because they can't pay their tax. So here we are. This taxation decree goes out in the midst of the four living ones. Who do you think the living ones are who are living out in the times of the black horse in the Roman Empire? Who are they, do you think? Think about what we said with respect to when John was asked by one of the four living ones to stand next to me. What do we say about that? Who were the four living ones? They were the cherubim. So the taxation decree by the emperors went out in all the Roman provinces. Nobody escaped tax. There was nowhere in the Roman provinces that tax wasn't instituted. Guess who was there all around the empire through which this tax went? Who was there? The four living ones. Who were they? Do you think? Absolutely. The brothers and sisters in Christ. That's telling me, young people, that the 84-year window of the Bowbenders, who started to preach the truth in the White Horse period, was so effective that when you get to the Black Horse period, our brothers and sisters are all over the province. So no matter where the tax went, there were our brothers and sisters. That's very encouraging. That's very encouraging because it means that the work that these poor people did in the first seal was so effective that our brothers and sisters were all over the empire, even though it was a terrible, terrible place to live. So you need to write that in your margin. You need to write in your margin of your Bibles that the four living ones were our brothers and sisters living in the provinces. Jot that in your margin. Jot that down in your notes. How are we going there, Craig? Still five. Good. Okay. In the midst of the four living ones, they are our brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. What a wonderful thing. Pardon me? Didn't hear you, Craig. Your accent is terrible. Now. Good. We'll end now. Absolutely, no problem. Do not apologise. Alrighty, so the taxation decree went right out into the period of the Black Horse period, and our brothers and sisters were there. Now what I'll do tomorrow, young people, is we will then have a look at what this amazing little expression means, a measure of wheat for a penny, three measures of barley for a penny, but don't you hurt the oil and the wine. Amazing little statement that we'll unpack tomorrow. Young people, I know you're tired. I know you've had a lot of things to absorb over this week, but I am super, super duper impressed with your effort to try and stay with us. Okay? Have a good day. Have a nice